"Let me just run this by my lawyer" is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? It's estimated over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com today.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
KFI AM 640. You're listening to the John and Ken Show on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
Coming up in just a bit, we're going to talk with the preeminent archivist of comedy, really, the guy who was really made studying comedy his business. Cliff Nesterhoff has a brand new book out called Outrageous, A History of Show Business and Culture Wars. We'll talk with him about his new book, and I think you'll find it fascinating. And we're living in the golden age of lying. We all know that, right? I've got a story for you I want to share, as well as, did you watch that GOP debate? I didn't. I got to confess, couldn't handle it. Couldn't do it. But we'll get into why I didn't watch it, and a Kit Kat crime. We'll get into all of that, as well as let you know that Timmy is still down with whatever he's got, despite the Purell. So coming up at 4, Kelvin Washington, Joe Kwan, my old buddy Joe Kwan, will be here. And I'll be back tomorrow as well. It is the first day of Hanukkah. It is also the 82nd anniversary of the December 7th attack on Pearl Harbor. And normally you wouldn't associate those events at all, but because of the October 7th attack on Israel, which is now another day of infamy, along with 9/11, obviously, we have these dates in our head that are now etched forever in the DNA of Western Civ. And they are really epical events. And obviously the war that goes on between Israel and Hamas continues to take lives, to cull lives. The Israelis are taking many more casualties now. Their soldiers on the ground are involved in very dangerous urban street fighting. And of course, the civilian death toll is horrific, and it's just a nightmare. And the ripple effects are being felt all over the world. They really are. And particularly here in the United States, where we've just kind of we just assumed, okay, it's Hanukkah, you put up the menorahs, and occasionally there'd be an ACLU lawsuit, you know, somebody would sue some town for having a manger scene or a menorah put up for separation of church and state, and we'd usually, you know, throw that off to the secretary of knock it off to say, look, this isn't a real problem. People celebrate Hanukkah, they celebrate Christmas. We could have a Christmas tree. It doesn't have to be a holiday tree. You can call it a Christmas tree, etc. But now... it's fraught with tension, because we saw when they tried to do the big Rockefeller Center Christmas thing with, you know, the celebrities that come out and they do a TV show and they turn the lights on the big Christmas tree at Rockefeller Center. They had to have a huge squad of NYPD out there to keep pro-Palestinian protesters away from the Christmas tree. And I know that this caused cognitive dissonance. A lot of people saying, excuse me, what does the Christmas tree have to do with Israel? What does the Christmas tree have to do with anything going on in the Middle East? And the truth is any public gathering right now can become a flashpoint for conflict because the pro-Palestinian / Hamas people are coming out at all public gatherings to hold America accountable for the actions of the Israeli government, saying that if it wasn't for you backing the Israelis, this wouldn't be happening, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know, good luck unraveling that one. You know, I learned a long time ago in talk radio that we ain't solving the Middle East conflict in talk radio. We're just not. All right. I didn't have Yasser Arafat on line 3. I don't have Mahmoud Abbas on line 2. I don't have Benjamin Netanyahu on line 1. I don't have any control over any of it. What I do know is when you send hundreds of people into a music festival with, you know, lawnmower engine powered hang gliders and Kalashnikovs to kill kids at a music festival and take babies hostage, you've done something horribly wrong, horrifically, unforgivably wrong. Now, what do you do about that? I don't know. It's above my pay grade, folks. It's always been above my pay grade. I hate seeing all the civilians killed every time a bomb drops in Gaza and more kids are grown up as orphans than they're fertile recruits for future terrorist strikes, and the endless cycle of violence goes on. The madness is, it just seems like it's never going to stop. But I do know this, that when we got hit on 9/11, we didn't hesitate to go to Afghanistan to try to root out Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda people who did it to us, and any country would. Now, you could argue from now until the end of time about what the Iraq war was about and why we went there and what that connection was to 9/11, which was zero. But the bottom line is that no country could not act after taking a blow like Israel took in October. But now it's here. And to show you how micro the impact of this is, California's got a state Christmas tree. I didn't know that until this story showed up in the papers. I didn't know we had a state Christmas tree because every mall's got a Christmas tree, right? They do it at the Grove in the middle of town. They do it all over the place. They light the Christmas tree. They sing some Christmas carols and hope that you go in to the stores and buy some stuff. That's really what goes on, right? So we have a state Christmas tree up in Sacramento on the grounds of the Capitol, and California's annual holiday tree lighting at the Capitol was postponed a day and then moved online. And the reason was potential protests. The event had been planned as a public gathering for Tuesday night. Instead, it was rescheduled to a pre-recorded virtual ceremony and then streamed Wednesday evening. So they pre-recorded it. I guess they waited until no one was around and said, turn the lights on, put the cameras on. There it is. Yay, the lights are on the Christmas tree. And then they posted it online as a live streaming event. Quote, as we continue to see protests across the country impacting the safety of events of all scales and for the safety and security of all participating members and guests, including children and families, the ceremony this year will be virtual, said a spokesperson for the governor's office. Since this is the John and Ken show, we can call him a spokeshole. All right. I know there's a registered trademark on that word, and good for them. That's like Pat Riley with three-peat. They really, I don't know if Johnny, did you know, Deborah, did they register the trademark on Spokeshole?
I'm not sure. I'm going to have to ask John next
week. Well, we know Ken won't answer
an
email.
Won't.
No,
yeah.
We'll never hear from him.
He's blocked me now.
But he never spoke to me. John, you could actually ask. Maybe he'll actually, I hope he did register that. Anyway, now you see something like this. And I understand why in the age of, you know, filing lawsuits and everybody pointing fingers at everybody, God forbid that they have a tree lighting ceremony in Sacramento and there's violence and a kid gets stomped or something. And then they'll say, you should have known. Look what happened to other places. And the next thing you know, the state of California, the taxpayers are another $14 million in a lawsuit. But it's hard not to look at this and say, how are we not encouraging similar behavior? If you can win, if you can shut down the tree lighting ceremony on the grounds of the state capitol, if the state capitol grounds cannot be secured from potential violence over something as benign as flipping a switch to light the Christmas tree, then what chance does the rest of us have? And this is not an insignificant, I know it's a tiny event and I don't want to blow it out of proportion, but this is how mobs win. This is how the threat of physical violence shuts down free speech and shuts down the free expression of your belief system. I had this impression right after the attacks took place when, you know, the World Cup is going on. You see flags of all of the World Cup soccer teams. I see them on cars around LA all the time. There was a flag a couple of years back, and I had no idea what the flag was. I had to try to drive and take a picture with my stupid cell phone while I was driving, which is not safe. It's not safe for me to be driving, period. It's definitely not safe for me to be driving while trying to take a picture in the number three lane. But I couldn't figure out what flag. It turns out it was Cameroon. And yes, that shows that I can't be in the GOP debates because I did not know what the flag of Cameroon looked like. All right, but I found it online. I said, oh, it's Cameroon. And they were in the World Cup. And people were flying the flag because they were deliriously happy that Cameroonians, the famous huge Cameroonian population in Southern California, was celebrating that their team was in the World Cup and good for them. No one's putting the Israeli flag up. I shouldn't say no one, but very few people are putting the Israeli flag up. Israelis who live here, American citizens who are formerly from Israel, Jews who identify with their religious homeland are afraid to put the flag up. And I've talked about this here on KFI. There's a lot of people who won't put the American flag up because they don't want their neighbors to think they voted for Trump. And that brings up a whole separate issue about identifying the American flag with one political party. But here's the deal. If you hate Trump and you won't fly the American flag, then guess what? You've kind of forfeited the symbolism of the flag to the other side. I mean, the real way to take the flag back if you don't like the way it's being used is for everybody to fly and say it's the national symbol for everybody. Not one party doesn't have a toehold on it, but if the other party won't fly it, then it kind of they've punted it away. But with the Israeli flag, there is a threat of political repercussions, of economic repercussions, and physical repercussions. And this is a real problem. We're seeing this happen all over the place. There's a guy, like a falafel shop in Philadelphia, had hundreds of people out in front of his store because he was an Israeli who ran a falafel shop. And he had hundreds of protesters outside his store saying that he's an oppressor. He's selling falafels, all right? These are strange, tense times, and it is the consequence of not just I think the technology is the tail wagging the dog because we have the ability to troll people over everything 24/7, 365 days a year, twice a day on Christmas and New Year. There is no escaping anything that happens anywhere in the world, especially in a country like the United States, and particularly in Southern California, which is an enormously diverse place. We have people from I was seeing Cameroon flags in such abundance that I had to look up what the flag was. And I got to be honest with you, I couldn't spot Cameroon on the map if you spotted me the camera. You know, maybe I could stumble into the room. But I mean, that's just the way it is now. And it ain't going to get any better. I mean, it's just accelerating. And we have to learn how to live and keep our balance. Otherwise, we're going to lose our minds. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation of culture wars, which this kind of is, with Cliff Nesterhoff, author of a new book called Outrageous, A History of Show Business and Culture Wars.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand from KFI AM 640.
Online, KFIAM640.com/listen. McIntyre in for John and Ken. I'll be here tomorrow on Monday as well. I am a great admirer of our next guest. I have read, I just got his brand new book, just started reading it. I read his first two books called The Comedians, Drunks, Thieves, Scoundrels, and the History of American Comedy. And his second book is one of my favorites. It's a totally fascinating story. It's called We Had a Little Real Estate Problem. the unheralded story of Native Americans and comedy, which you would think, okay, what's page four? Fascinating story, and I highly recommend it. And his brand new book is out now. It's called Outrageous, A History of Showbiz and the Culture Wars. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Cliff Nesterhoff. Cliff, how are you?
I'm good, Doug. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. I know you've been all over the place, so thanks for making time for us. And by the way, Cliff is spelled K-L-I-P-H Nesterhoff. If you're looking for the book online, you will find it easily. So let's talk about the new book because, you know, we just had Norman Lear. We lost Norman Lear at 101. And he almost represented, All in the Family really created in some ways the modern culture war, if you will, of how people responded to that show. It's how shocking it was to America when it first came on. And we're kind of, we've been fighting that fight ever since.
Well, yeah, I mean, comedy and politics are sort of merged these days. You hear political commentary, sometimes overt, sometimes as an undercurrent in almost every comedy show these days. But when Norman Lear started, he was a rudimentary comedy writer. He wrote for Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin on the Colgate Comedy Hour. He wrote for Martha Raye, who was sort of a progenitor of Lucille Ball's physical comedy, very popular in the 30s and 40s. She had a TV show in the 50s that Norman Lear wrote for. And in the 1950s, Norman Lear saw Lenny Bruce do stand-up comedy. And Lenny Bruce was one of the first modern comics to tackle certain topics that up to that point had been taboo: organized religion, politics, cuss words. All these things were forbidden in American comedy for decades and decades and decades. So Norman Lear saw Lenny Bruce and he was very much inspired by him. But in those days, the constraints of network television did not allow for much social commentary. So people know now that All in the Family and Maude and shows of that type that Norman Lear produced had plenty of social commentary. But just a few years earlier, before the creation of shows like All in the Family and Maude, most sitcoms conformed to sort of a fantasy world. Mr. Ed, Bewitched, The Addams Family, The Munsters, I Dream of Jeannie. Almost none of these shows, even though they were made by and many talented people were involved in them, they had no basis in reality. So Norman Lear really brought that realism to television, and that was actually shocking at the time. And now we take it for granted because almost all comedy that we see addresses these types of things, social issues, political issues, sexual issues. And Norman Lear was really the first.
And it's really always been that way, in a sense, in the maybe since the advent of network radio in the late 20s, when all of a sudden, you know, before that, entertainment was singing in church or, you know, a sing along after dinner with Aunt Helen playing the organ in the parlor. And then we had professionals. We had, you know, Bing Crosby and we had people like that. And I remember, you know, Frank Sinatra in the 1940s, the early 1940s. J. Edgar Hoover opened a file on Sinatra for corrupting the morals of Americans' youth. I mean, people were really looking at those girls screaming at the Paramount Theater saying, we're doomed if this is the future. So this isn't.
And that followed. I mean, that's the same thing that happened with Elvis. That's the same thing that happened with the Beatles. It's the same thing that happened with punk rock, with hip hop. Every generation has their own hysteria. Often it's said to be done in the name of saving the children. Frequently, that is a cover for more nefarious and sometimes bigoted motives. You mentioned Bing Crosby. In the late 1920s, crooning was considered indecent. It was considered immoral. Rudy Valli and Bing Crosby were accused of moaning sexually into the microphone. And there were many people in churches, on pulpits, that were ranting and raving against the evil influence of crooning, and then jazz music, and then swing music, and then the jitterbug. And then in the early 60s, we had the twist. And you could sort of understand, coming out of such a sort of puritanical era, how the advent of the Beatles might shock parents as they saw thousands of teenage girls losing their minds, screaming and crying. It was a little bit alarming, but it is funny to look back on it now. Now it's funny to us. But at the time, people took those types of hysterias very, very seriously. And one of the points I try to make in my book that I hope people will take away is that all of those hysterias of the past look absurd to us today, but we have hysterias that are occurring right now that people take very, very seriously. People got mad about the Barbie movie. But if it doesn't look absurd now, a few years from now, it certainly will.
Hey, Cliff, do you have a couple minutes? I'd love to hold you over if I can, because there's so much to talk about. We're talking with Cliff Nesterhoff. His new book is called Outrageous, A History of Showbiz and the Culture Wars. We've got so much to get into. A lot of folks talk about cancel culture, about how, quote unquote, Jerry Seinfeld won't even play college campuses, which I don't believe is even true. I don't think he's actually said that. But we'll get into that with Cliff. There's a lot to talk about.
Let me just run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand from KFI AM 640.
Online, KFIAM640.com/listen. McIntyre in for John and Ken. I'll be here tomorrow and Monday as well. And Saturday from noon to 2 p.m., I'm going to be at David K. Books in Woodland Hills signing my novel, Frank's Shadow. And I'd love to see you out there. It's between Shoup and Fallbrook. So come on out and say hello right under the big yellow sign. You can't miss it. We're talking with Cliff Nesterhoff, whose new book is called Outrageous, A History of Showbiz and the Culture Wars. And you can find that pretty much in any bookstore now and, of course, online. Cliff, thanks for hanging in with us. I didn't mean to spring a second segment on you, but there's so much I wanted to ask you. We talk a lot about the cancel culture. And there have been examples, obviously, even with All in the Family. I mean, based on my, you know, my long time as a TV writer, producer, I don't know that you could sell All in the Family to to network television in today's climate and use that language. But with that said, there's also, in a lot of ways, comedy has become more democratized than ever, given the new technologies available. Did we lose him? Sorry, Cliff.
I'm here. In the case of All in the Family, they weren't able to sell it back then either. Norman Lear pitched it three different times. They commissioned two different pilots that were both rejected before it finally was accepted to go to the air. So it took them several years to get that show on TV. One of the reasons it was that the advertisers, the sponsors, and the network felt America wasn't ready for it. They felt that they weren't mature enough to understand a satire about bigotry. But American social mores were changing in the late 60s, of course. So by the early 70s, they felt, okay, we'll take a chance, we'll take a risk, But when All in the Family debuted, it was heavily criticized. It was not an automatic success. It got criticism from all sides. There was a guy named Brent Bazell Jr. who was he had an organization that constantly was accusing television of being immoral, and he called All in the Family communist propaganda. The comedian Red Skelton from the 1950s, same thing. He said All in the Family is communism from start to finish. And then on the other side of the spectrum, left-wing people criticized All in the Family because they felt that having a character as a bigot would only encourage people watching it to embrace bigotry and sort of miss the joke. So even back then, and I know we always say that, well, you couldn't make it today, you could barely make it then. And it still had lots of critics, even as it became a huge success. Now, today, I would argue there is more free expression available to us in television, film, music, the stage, stand-up comedy, certainly much more than in the past. Compare what was not allowed to be said, even to this day, on mainstream network television, ABC, CBS, NBC, to what you can say on cable television, what you can say on streaming services. Compare what you cannot say throughout all of history on AM and FM radio to what you can say on satellite radio, to what you can say on podcasts and the internet. And if you look at the taboos of the 20th century, the things that were absolutely forbidden from radio and television, and things that could get you arrested as a live performer, included criticism of religion, criticism of politics, swearing on stage, Mae West, Lenny Bruce, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, they were all arrested for using salacious language in their act. In the case of Mae West, it was merely innuendo about sex, which got her arrested, and she spent 10 days in jail. That simply doesn't happen anymore, despite the fact that there are some new taboos, most of them focused on slurs or what people perceive as bigoted language. But ultimately, compared to the entire duration of the 20th century, we actually have more freedom of expression in comedy today, not less.
Well, I agree, and I think that it's not even a matter of opinion. It's just it's an empirical, provable point, because we've democratized, essentially, the digital revolution has democratized everything, and we're still we're kind of struggling with the flood, the avalanche of material. What died in the process is the notion of broadcasting, because what we have is essentially narrowcasting. I mean, that's why I suppose the Super Bowl and Taylor Swift are so valuable, because there aren't that many culturally universal items that we can all absorb at the same time, the way we did at the peak of the Ed Sullivan Show, when everybody saw the Beatles at the same time, and then that became the thing. It's very,
well,
very...
I like the fact that you brought up the Super Bowl. Just another analogy to demonstrate how much more freedom of expression we have in modern media. The Janet Jackson Super Bowl halftime scandal was not even 20 years ago, 19 going on 20 years. That was such a hysteria about this half-second glimpse of her chest that it dominated media for weeks, months. People in the halls of Congress were condemning it, and ultimately CBS had to pay $500,000 fine to the FCC. Now you look at shows like Euphoria or The Righteous Gemstones, they have full frontal nudity in these shows, and it's not even a controversy. So once again, I feel that just as some newer taboos have emerged, most of them focused on slurs, far more taboos have been shattered, even in just the last 20 years.
Well, let me ask you, we're talking with Cliff Nesterhoff. His book is called Outrageous, A History of Showbiz and the Culture Wars. It's not a TV situation, but Woody Allen a few years ago wrote a really wonderful memoir, actually, and a defense on the whole scandal around his life called Apropos of Nothing. And the book was literally canceled by the employees of Little Brown Hachette. The publisher was supposed to publish the book. They just, and the company folded. They totally bailed on the book.
Yes, that happens. You know, in my book, I specifically am referring, although I do have some of these other examples, people react differently to what comedian does on stage to what they do off stage. And when we talk about cancel culture, we often lump them together. People say you can't joke about anything anymore, and then they give an example of a scandal the person's been involved in off stage. So in the case of Woody Allen, we're dealing with a situation that is outside the confines of his act. But the example that you give of the employees protesting the publication of that book, and then they pulled it, and I think it was only published in Europe. Of course, you can still get it on Amazon if you really wanted to. It reminds me a little bit of the reaction in the 1920s to Fatty Arbuckle, mm-hmm. the silent comedian and the famous Fatty Arbuckle scandal. He had been implicated in the death of a woman at a wild San Francisco party. He was acquitted of all charges after a couple different trials, one where they couldn't come to a verdict, and then ultimately he was acquitted, but it didn't matter. His movies were still pulled from movie screens across America. He tried to book a personal appearance tour. He was welcomed by some theaters, banned by others, and it ultimately didn't matter. You know, he had been considered guilty by many or a symbol of Hollywood's immorality. And so there are examples of that throughout history. Once again, I don't feel that it is completely a new phenomenon, although the variable of social media makes these types of controversies ultimately far more intense than they were in the past, because all of the grievance, all of the complaint, all of the protest is sort of concentrated in one place and fed to us over and over and over. Whereas in the past, it may have been a protest in public, or it may have been a letter to the editor, but you were not necessarily inundated with it to the degree that we are today.
And all Fatty Arbuckle came back and worked as a director under the nom de screen of Will Be Good. Will, the yes. initial Be Good, which was sort of his response to it. But the truth is that the social critic comics, their job is not to be good. It's to rattle cages. And that's what George Carlin did. Obviously, that's what Lenny Bruce did before. And that's what, look, it was Burris is the one who brought down Bill Cosby. It was from the stages of a comedy club that were posted on social media that actually ignited the fire that resulted in the Bill Cosby investigations.
Yes. I don't think that was ever really Hannibal Buress's intent one way or the other. It sort of took on a life of its own because the Bill Cosby scandal had already been reported.
Right. Yeah, many times. But...
Yeah, and it just never gained traction. Hannibal Buress did that routine, never with the intention, I don't think, of it gaining traction, but of course it did. You really don't know where things are going to head sometimes. You know, people always say, to me, they're like, Cliff, you know, these days now any comedian can upload to YouTube and they can go viral, or they can do their own podcast. They can circumvent the networks. I go, yes, but it still requires luck in order to succeed. There are thousands of people who make podcasts that nobody listens to.
That's
and there
exactly
are thousands
right.
of uploads to YouTube that have been up there for 10 years that have less than 100 views.
Yeah.
So the one constant throughout showbiz history, whether it was old-time radio, vaudeville, early TV, cable television, or today with the internet, the variable is still good luck. You got to have good luck in order to succeed, and you can't really control that. And then the same thing with these scandals. You never really know when the scandal is going to blow up. It could be sitting there all along and people will ignore it, or it can gain traction. You just really never know what's going to go viral. It's really not up to us. It's sort of up to the ether.
Outrageous, A History of Showbiz and the Culture Wars is available everywhere books are sold. And I highly recommend all of Cliff's books. He really has carved out a great niche in the history department, and it's a great cultural history and just wildly entertaining read. Cliff, thanks so much for being with us. That's Cliff, K-L-I-P-H, Nesterhoff. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to John and Ken on Demand from KFI AM 640.
Kelvin Washington and Joe Kwan coming up at 4 o'clock in for the ailing Tim Conway Jr. I don't know, somehow, some kind of creeping crud, it's got to be a super bacteria to penetrate his protective shield of Purell. The man sweats Purell at this point, and yet somehow he managed to come down with something anyway. Hopefully Timmy gets better, back here soon. All right, I saved the best for last, folks. By the way, I will be back here tomorrow and Monday as well. And then on Tuesday, the show now becomes the John Culbert Show officially. So I am here to shovel the final shovelfuls of dirt over the John and Ken Show, which ended yesterday with Ken's retirement. And congratulations again to both of them for a fantastic career. And I wish Ken personally just a great retirement. I hope he has as much fun as I've had. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, here's a story. You just can't make this up. This may be the most telling story of the age in which we live. The Washington Post is reporting this, and how they got it is probably a story unto itself. But apparently there is something called political humiliation. And I'm not just talking about like George Santos or losing an election really badly. This is like in the kink community where libtard subs fantasize about being dominated by MAGA doms and vice versa. Journalist Haley Lieberman, and I'd love to find out, we have to get Haley on here to find out how she uncovered this story, published a transcript from a political humiliation video which featured a dominatrix trying to persuade beta liberals to vote Republican for Daddy Trump. That's a direct quote. The dominatrix, who voted for former President Donald Trump twice but now supports Ron DeSantis, told the Washington Post she, quote, earns six figures annually with her niche content. And the reporter for the Post also spoke to a 33-year-old Republican, quote, whose day job involves monitoring politics and liberal media for an unnamed radio host, it's not me, but who runs the fetish group MAGA Doms slash Doms, that's D-O-M-S slash D-O-M-M-E-S, and Libtard Subs by night. On MAGA Doms Doms and Libtard Subs, members post requests such as, quote, looking for a MAGA Dom to red pill me and convince me to share my wife. And reports that one man described his fantasy as wearing a Trump dog collar, which is sold on Donald Trump's campaign website. Don't ask me why. And being walked around to Walmart to pick a dog bone. Oh boy, you can't make this up. And meanwhile, there is a man who is self-described as very, very liberal, who told the Washington Post that he fantasizes about a Marjorie Taylor Greene and Laura Boebert forcing a tryst, I guess, three-way, that forces him to vote straight red Donald Trump. I don't even know why we try to make stuff up. Hey, coming up for Timmy, it's going to be Kelvin Washington and Joe Kwan, who are with us right now. What do you guys got coming up?
Hello. I haven't seen you in...
At least a decade.
We used to work together at KABC Radio.
Right, when you were first starting and I was already embittered, crabby old
no.
has-been then.
How things change.
Not at all.
No.
No.
We got a lot coming up. Obviously, you have a GOP debate. So, which, I mean, at this point, I don't know. Why are they even doing it? Exactly. But, you know.
Entertainment.
Well, sure. Also, just, no, listen, notoriety.
That's
because
true.
I can sell some books after I lose is what maybe some of them are thinking.
I swear, I think that half the people who run for president run just so they could have a yard card in their rec room.
There you go.
That says I ran for president.
I'm going to say you're being gracious by saying half. I'm going three quarters. So we'll get into that. We'll get into obviously some, you know, some tragedies when you're talking about gun violence that's been happening, you know, Redondo Beach again.
We'll have some lighter stuff too.
Yeah,
holiday. I was trying to top
that the BDSM community has MAGA doms and libtard subs.
Yeah. Nope.
This is Washington Post reporting this.
Wow.
This isn't just me making it up for once.
Hey, you've been listening to the John and Ken Show. You can always hear us live on KFI AM 640, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday. And, of course, anytime on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
Let me just run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.